This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Our radio program is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and our TV show can be viewed on Free Speech TV and on our website. Millions of people marched around the country and also the world on January 21st. Among them was my guest, Rosa Clemente, the 2008 Green Party vice presidential candidate who knows a thing or two about electoral politics and also grassroots organizing. Throughout the presidential campaign season last year, Clemente's voice was a powerful one, warning us of the dangers of succumbing to the Democratic Party machine while calling out the dangers of Donald Trump. Rosa Clemente is a community organizer. She's active with Black Lives Matter. She's also a freelance journalist and currently a doctoral candidate in the W.E.B. Du Bois Department of Afro-American Studies at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, and she's also a news correspondent for Rising Up with Sonali. Welcome back to the show, Rosa.
Thank you, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us today. So you made the decision not to go to Washington, D.C. for the Women's March over the weekend. You marched instead at your local march in Albany, New York. Can you tell us a little bit about why you were in your hometown rather than at this national gathering that attracted a lot of well-known figures of your stature?
Well, I actually had spent the week out in the West Coast and or the mid Pacific Northwest. I was at Colorado College with my sister, Jennifer Calderon, also known as J-Love. We trained 50 young people at the college to become organizers. A lot of them were going either to the big march in Denver or were traveling to DC themselves. And then I spent the rest of the week in the Pacific Northwest at various colleges speaking to students. So I actually came back Friday here to Albany and I was too exhausted to go to DC. Although I really did want to be in DC, especially knowing three of the women who organized this and really seeing them grow in the last 5 years into these amazing women of color activists and organizers, Carmen Perez, Tamika Mallory, and Linda Sasour. But I thought it was also, you know, meant to be in terms of being in my local community, where I think that's where we have to focus a lot of our work on. And that's why I was with the march here in Albany, New York, that attracted over 8,500 people. And that's a big number. And I think people hear about the big cities, but imagine all the cities the size of Albany, just in New York, Rochester, Buffalo, Syracuse, but all throughout the country that don't get even mentioned. So it was pretty powerful.
So you mentioned the three women of color organizers. Among the organizers at large of the Women's March on Washington, D.C., how important is this move? Because we've had many instances in the past where major events, protests or conferences, etc., have been organized by an almost white group of people with, you know, often, say, speaking panels that are all white and just kind of a blind spot, even among white progressives who might pay lip service to racial and gender justice and then simply fail to have women of color be part of the conversation. Does this represent progress?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, again, these three women of color are known for the work that they do every day as well. But, you know, I think it's important to realize what happened Saturday was not, I mean, at least in my opinion, was not the most radical action we could do or the most revolutionary thing that we could do, right? It was still obviously majority white women. You know, not a lot of them were as open as some of them to hearing a radical politic, right? You know, so I think it's important to look at marches as what they are. They're state-sanctioned events, right? I mean, you have to get a permit, and a lot of these huge marches were permitted by the state. What does that mean when the state sanctions something?
And also, a lot of people were happy about the fact that there were zero arrests at a lot of the major marches, but that basically means, I mean, does that mean that the marches really did anything out of the establishment?
Well, I think what that means as well is I don't think police were going to be ready to pounce on particularly white women wearing pink hats, you know, for the majority. So there's a privilege in that, too. And I think that when people say there are no arrests, that's to say that they, when there are arrests, that there's something wrong. No, when there are arrests, that's the radical rebellion that happens either spontaneously or has been planned and organized to be that way. So I would caution, especially those of us who are radical, revolutionary, progressives, to even get caught up in that rhetoric. I think it's very divisive in terms of then when there are protests and or spontaneous rebellions, there's a reason why there are arrests, and that's often because the police come in and agitate or instigate. But there were 217 arrests, and a lot of them were at the beginning. A lot of them happened during, well, right, not at the protest Saturday, but there were 217 people arrested on Friday. A lot of those were Black Matter organizers and other folks that locked down so that people could not get into the checkpoints in the inauguration or took to the streets. I think people just again have, I try to see marches as a way to recruit, to talk to like-minded people and to see what's happening and what I could do locally, right? I think we as organizers have to see these moments as recruiting moments, as moments where we raise political consciousness, and as moments where we really figure out, are we going to be about the everyday grassroots work, or are we just showing up to these events?
Rosa, let's talk about the lessons that you and others drew from organizing under the Liberal Democratic presidency of Barack Obama, that many, sadly, Liberal Democrats were blind to the failings of that tenure. For example, right at the very end of Obama's tenure, he signed a commutation of the sentence of Puerto Rican independence leader Oscar Lopez Rivera, a political prisoner that I know that you and many others hailed as this just enormous victory and a credit to the movement that's worked very hard to free him. Tell us about how that victory was attained, because it's easy to simply give Mr. Obama credit.
Yeah, I mean, I think first that that was a movement that's been over 30 years consistently happening. So whether it was to free Lolita, LeBron and her comrades and their commutation in the late 70s by Jimmy Carter, as well as the 11 Puerto Rican political prisoners whose sentences were commutated in 1999 by Bill Clinton. And now we have Oscar Lopez Rivera. We still have Ana Belén Montes, who's still incarcerated. And because we in that specific movement around freeing Puerto Rican political prisoners or fighting for independence of Puerto Rico, we don't depend on the Democratic Party. Right. And we've gotten our commutations under Democratic presidents, but the work has been ongoing. I would even caution people to, you know, these protests and marches could easily be co-opted by the Democratic Party. And in fact, you saw some of that being attempted already from the main stage in Washington, D.C., that all of this progress or all of this movement work, excuse me, has to always then relate to getting people elected into office. The thing with the movement to free Oscar Lopez Rivera, not only the length of time, that there's always been a political consciousness raising in the Puerto Rican community around him, and that regardless of ideological stripe, whether you're an independista, you're statehooder, you live in Puerto Rico, or you live in Chicago, Illinois, the freedom of Oscar Lopez Rivera as a Puerto Rican is very, you grew up with it. It's something that you fought for and that we were going to fight for. And then we use whatever electro-political means are at our disposal, but we didn't only depend on that. So there was a lot of pressure building towards President Obama signing that. And that is what is, that essentially is a movement. And that's a grassroots from the bottom up movement that got a win. And Oscar's coming home on May 17th, as well as Chelsea Manning. And that's fantastic.
Rosa, tell us a little bit about what Oscar Lopez Rivera fought for and when it was imprisoned, how it was that he was imprisoned. It was an interesting news article that said if you were outraged by Chelsea Manning's commutation, for those people on the right who were outraged by it, you should be much more outraged by the freeing of Rivera, because this person basically characterized the political prisoner as a violent person, you know, and conflated him with the many acts of terror, quote unquote, and property destruction and even lives lost. So let's set the record straight for our audience, please.
Yeah, well, Oscar was part of the FALN, and that was the Front to Liberate Puerto Rico. And that's a lot of Puerto Ricans who were already living in the United States. And what Oscar was convicted of was seditious conspiracy, which simply means that he thought about or he lectured about or he organized around freeing Puerto Rico, around the United States decolonizing, or the United Nations calling for decolonization, but for the United States basically to leave Puerto Rico. And he had other comrades. There were, like I said, 12, or he would have been the 12th, right? When that, in 1999, when Bill Clinton commuted the sentences, Oscar could have gotten out, but he refused to take the commutation at that time in 1999, because two of the other comrades of his wouldn't have been freed, who were also part of the FALN. And Oscar did not take that. Those two comrades had since been released, right? So Oscar was the last remaining member of the FALN that were all convicted in the early 80s because they talked about, lectured, or organized around Puerto Rico being an independent nation. There's another organization as part of Puerto Rican resistance called Los Machateros, and they were more underground, and their activities could be said and be viewed by the right or extremists or conservative, even some liberals, as terroristic because they chose to engage in property damage and also liberation of monies from banks to give back into Puerto Rico and the movement. And most people might remember Filiberto Ojeda Rios, who was underground for many years until the FBI assassinated him in his home about a decade ago. So in the Puerto Rican independence struggle, there's also been various organizations. Oscar represented that FALN. So for, you know, when I read that, I'm like, they have no clue who Oscar was, and that most people, again, don't know that he could have been released over 18 years ago. All right. He had to do was say, I'm coming out.
Right. I mean, the fact that he was offered clemency under both Clinton and Obama is remarkable. And the fact that he chose to, you know, stay in prison on principle and put his own body on the line is a remarkable example, Rosa. And I'm wondering what you see as, or how you see his, you know, him finally coming home on May 17th. In the struggle for Puerto Rican both independence, sovereignty, and just in general, the kind of importance of the statehood of Puerto Rico. How is it going to be a shot in the arm for activists to have him come home?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, for what Saturday was to the majority of people in this country and throughout the world, to be able to start to build a resistance from their local community or you know, the organizing work that they want to do. Oscar coming home to us, especially as Puerto Ricans, is that same feeling, except that Oscar coming home gives so much energy and so much like a shot in the arm, as you said, to Puerto Ricans now understanding and wanting to be fully independent. And when he returns home to Puerto Rico and is on the ground and can not only share his wisdom, but share his tactics, his way of thinking, how he thinks that the independence movement, what it should look like, is going to be an incredible time in Puerto Rican resistance history. And you know, when I got the call, when I saw that, I was in a restaurant with a bunch of white businessmen, because I was in Vancouver, Washington, preparing for this speech. And I screamed, I cried, because there has not been anything I have organized around in the last 20 years that does not include Oscar Lopez Rivera in one form or fashion. And imagine a Puerto Rican, the island itself with 2.7 million people, and the rest of us throughout the diaspora, to see him come home. I mean, I'll be in Puerto Rico to see him come home. That's how critical Oscar is to those of us who come from the Puerto Rican independence, a political strife. But I think it should be a victory that we all, as a people who are revolutionary and radical, claim.
So finally, Rosa, what words of advice would you give, particularly to the young women that showed up on January 21st in cities around the country, for whom it might be their very first political act? Not just all young women, but in particular, women of color.
That don't let it be your last political act. you know, don't get caught up in the hype of electoral politics. I think some of us have to do that work, but I think the most important work we could do now is really being in our local communities. How do we defend ourselves, like literally and figuratively defend ourselves? How are we going to prepare to put our bodies on the line for undocumented people? How are we going to prepare to fight back a Muslim registry? And how are we going to prepare in our local communities to take power, seize power, and be able to run our communities in the way we know they need to be run, with basically the principles of food, clothing, shelter, and economic equity? And, you know, that takes work. And to be an advocate is one thing. To be an activist is another thing. To be an organizer, this has to be part of your daily life. It has to be in your DNA. And wherever you are, no matter the space, you have to learn how to organize. And that takes a little bit of time, but it can be done. And I hope that all those women, if this was their first time, or if they're listening to this right now, know that it's not always glamorous, but it's the best work you'll ever do in your life.
Well, Rosa, I thank you so much for joining us today and for the example that you have provided for me and for many other women around the country with the work that you do. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Sonali.
Rosa Clemente is a community organizer active with Black Lives Matter. She's a freelance journalist. She was the 2008 Green Party vice presidential candidate, currently a doctoral candidate in the W.E.B. Du Bois Department of Afro-American Studies at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. She's also one of our news correspondents. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. We're also on Twitter at twitter.com/RUwithSonali.